No one came to talk to Winnie for the rest of the day. He stayed over in the corner next to the fireplace and listened carefully to their conversations to see if there was anything he could learn that might be used to his advantage. He studied the layout of the shack in order to try and determine a way of escaping. There were only two windows high on the walls at each end, one over a double bunk bed, the other over the stove. The only other way out was the single door in the front of the building. That night, Winnie accepted the offer of a bowl of cold beans.
Now, boy, let me tell you how this is going to work. One of us is going to be awake all night long. We'll be keeping an eye on you, so don't get any idea about trying to escape, because it ain't going to happen. You understand that?
Yes, sir.
When it got dark enough, the men lit a lantern and set it on the table so they could see to play cards. Winnie stretched out on the floor and went to sleep. He had no idea how long he had been asleep when he woke up. It was still dark, and the lantern, though still burning, had been turned down very low so that the room, though illuminated, was barely so. Perhaps this was his opportunity to escape. Getting on his feet as quietly as he could, he started toward the door. That was when he saw someone sitting in a chair right beside the door. Winnie's spirits fell when he saw that. Then he remembered that Logan had told him that he was going to keep someone awake all night long so they could keep an eye on him. Winnie recognized him. It was Clayton, the cook. But as Winnie continued to stare at him for a long moment, he saw that Clayton didn't seem to be moving. Winnie took a step toward him, walking as quietly as he could. Clayton had not noticed him, and Winnie felt a surge of hope and excitement when he realized that, like the others, Clayton was asleep. Moving quietly and scarcely daring to breathe, Winnie crossed the floor and stepped up to the door. The problem now was whether or not he could open the door without it squeaking. Reaching up with a nervous hand, Winnie turned the door handle, then pulled it open. Stepping outside, Winnie pulled the door shut. If he was lucky, he could be a considerable distance away before anyone noticed that he was gone. Looking back toward the door to make certain Clayton didn't notice his absence and suddenly jerked the door open, he stepped down from the porch.
Where are you going, boy?
Before he could react, Poindexter reached out to grab him.
Well, now, it's a good thing I came outside to take a piss, ain't it? Otherwise, you might have wandered off somewhere and got yourself lost. You don't want to get lost up here, boy. There's wolves and bears about.
Still holding him by the arm, Poindexter pushed Winnie back into the line shack.
Hey!
What are you shouting for?
What's going on?
I just thought you fellas might like to know that the boy here was escaping. Seems to me like we were supposed to be keeping an eye on him.
Clayton, you're the one supposed to be watching him now, ain't you?
I must have dozed off. I'm sorry. I didn't see the boy leave.
If this was the army, you'd be stood up against a post and shot for falling asleep on guard duty.
I said I'm sorry. I don't lie around all day like you boys. I cook, and that means I'm on my feet most of the day.
All right. Here's the way it's going to be. If the boy escapes again, I'll kill whoever is supposed to be watching out for him. Did you hear that, boy? If you escape again, you'll be responsible for someone getting killed. And then when we find you, and we will find you, I'll kill you as well. Now get back over that corner and stay there.
Winnie complied with Logan's order without comment. At the junction of Nine Mile Creek and the Powder River, Matt tied Spirit off so he couldn't be seen. Then he climbed up onto a precipice that afforded him enough elevation to be able to see for a long way in either direction, or at least as far as he could see in the darkness. It was 3 a.m., and he had come in the middle of the night so he would be there far in advance of the time set by the note. It was his intention to see whoever Logan was going to send to meet him. From here, he could see back down the Powder River and up the small creek, both streams reflecting silver in the moonlight. Sitting down, he leaned back against a ponderosa pine and waited. The next morning, Teasdale arrived at Frewen Castle. When Benjamin showed him into the parlor, he saw Frewen, Clara, and Jenny, all with worried looks on their faces.
William, have you heard?
Yes.
That's why I have come to wait with you.
That is very nice of you.
Teasdale went over to the sofa where Jenny was sitting.
Mrs. Churchill, I'm so sorry this has happened. And now I feel guilty about it.
Why should you feel guilty?
Because I made a horse available for the boy. And if he hadn't been out riding by himself, he would never have been abducted.
Oh, don't be silly. I've never seen Winnie happier than he has been these last several days, riding all over creation. If you hadn't given him a horse to ride, I'm sure Morton would have.
Benjamin.
Yes, madam?
Would you please bring tea for everyone?
Yes, mum.
I must say, you're taking this better than I would have thought.
Matt told me he would bring Winnie home safely, and I believe him.
Does he have any leads?
Only what the note said.
Walking over to his desk, he picked up the note, then brought it to Teasdale, who sat down to read it.
It says they want him there by 10 o'clock. It's probably about time for him to leave, don't you think?
He is already there.
What?
He said he wanted to be there when they arrived, so he left in the middle of the night.
But isn't that rather foolish of him?
Foolish? How?
They asked him to be there at 10 o'clock, not in the middle of the night. Aren't you afraid that if they feel they have been double-crossed, that they might do harm to the boy?
I don't feel that way at all. I think they wanted him there at 10 o'clock because they plan to ambush him. This whole thing was merely to set a trap for Mr. Jensen. I'm sure you have heard that someone has posted a $5,000 reward payable to anyone who can kill him.
Yes, the story is all over the valley. And from what I understand, there have already been several who have tried unsuccessfully to collect the reward.
To their sorrow. So far, 6 men have tried, and 6 men have died.
Benjamin returned with the tea, and for the next few moments, the four sat around the parlor, sipping their tea in silence.
Tell me, truthfully, Morton, considering everything that has happened, are you not having second thoughts about this ranching venture of yours?
I will confess that this entire enterprise has been much more difficult than I ever would have imagined, and I have tried to explain this to my backers. If the spring rains fail, grazing on the upper range is non-existent. We've had 2 bitter winters, and when we do manage to get our cattle through the winter and drought, the herd has to be driven for 500 miles before they can be shipped to Chicago. And then, on top of all that, I've had my herd decimated by this despicable Sam Logan character.
There is a way that you can avoid all this. My offer to buy you out still goes.
I appreciate that, William. I really do. But there is no way I am going to turn my back on this now. I just can't face the humiliation.
Humiliation? Morton, you have had 6 of your cowboys killed. You have had nearly 1/3 of your herd stolen. And now your nephew is in great peril. Humiliation is the absolute last thing you should worry about.
Maybe humiliation was a bit too strong a word. I suppose the word I should use is pride. I have too much pride to quit now.
Morton, I'm sure you are familiar with the saying, pride goeth before a fall.
More specifically, Proverbs 16, verse 18, pride goeth before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. Yes, I have considered that, believe me.
I have to hand it to you, Morton, to stick it out the way you have.
I've been lucky to have a friend like you, William. Not only because I need a reminder of England now and then, but also because you have faced the same hardships I have, and you have stood up to them better. You are not only a friend, you are an inspiration.
Yes, well, I suppose I had better get back to Thistledown. I just wanted to come over and let you know that I am thinking about you and the boy. Please feel free to call upon me if there is anything you need.
Thank you.
Teasdale went back to the ladies and bowed before each of them, lifted their hands to his lips.
You are a very brave woman, Lady Churchill. I do hope everything turns out well for you.
Thank you, Sir William.
It was a little before 9 o'clock in the morning when Matt heard them coming. Lying flat on the rock and sliding back so as not to be seen, he He watched them approach.
Paul, you get up there and keep a lookout. When you see him coming, give us a signal.
The one called Poole started up the side of the bluff, and Matt knew that he would be coming to this very rock. So he slipped down from the rock and started down so that as Poole was climbing up, Matt was climbing down.
Hey, Greer!
Yeah?
What's the reward on killing Jensen?
Logan says Teasdale's offer $5,000 anyone who can kill Jensen.
Well, does that go for us, too?
Sure, I don't see why not.
Ha! Whoa! And what do we get from him for each cow we steal? $5? We'd have to steal 1,000 cows to make that kind of money. Oh, he must really want him dead. So tell me, are we going to shoot the son of a bitch here, or are we going to take him back to the cabin?
Logan wants us to bring him back to the cabin.
Yeah, you know why he wants us to bring him back. That's because if we take him into Logan before we kill him, it'd be split six ways. But if we kill him here, it'd only be split three ways.
You want Logan mad at you, do you? I don't know about you, but Logan ain't the kind of man I want to cross. He said bring him back to the cabin, and that's just exactly what we're going to do.
Hey, fool, you see him coming?
Nah, I don't see nothing.
Hell, if he's going to get here by 10 o'clock, you ought to see him by now. No doubt he'll be following the river. Look again.
I did look again. I ain't seen him.
Damn. What if he don't come?
I don't know. We'll kill the boy, I reckon.
Yeah, I guess so. You'd think he would come, though.
Really? Think about this. He has to know that if he comes here, he's coming to get himself killed. Now, let me ask you, would you do that? Would you trade your life for the boy's life?
Hell no! But Jensen is different.
Different how?
I don't know. Different how. Just different. What time is it?
Bragg took out his pocket watch and looked at it.
It's 10 o'clock.
And I'm right on time.
Matt stepped out of the tree line.
What? What the hell? Greer!
Yeah, I see him. Where'd you come from?
Oh, it ain't a question of where. It's a question of when. You didn't just get here, did you?
Your friend is smarter than he looks. I got here early, very early. Call Poole down.
Poole?
Yeah?
Come down here.
What for? I ain't seen nothing yet.
He's already here.
What? What do you mean?
I mean he's already here, standing right in front of us. Come on down.
Matt moved a bit deeper into the tree line and watched as Poole stepped out to the edge of the flat rock where Matt had spent the last several hours. Poole had his pistol in hand, and he was looking down toward Greer and Bragg.
What do you mean he's standing right in front of you? I don't see him.
Matt stepped out of the tree line so Poole could see him.
I'm right here. Why don't you come on down and join the party?
The hell I will!
Raising his pistol, he aimed and fired at Matt. Matt didn't miss. Bragg made the calculation that with Matt's attention diverted by Poole, he wouldn't be able to respond quickly enough if he drew on him. The calculation was wrong. If Greer had given a thought to drawing on Matt, he abandoned it quickly and put his arms up in the air.
I ain't going for my gun.
Having heard the shooting, Logan, Poindexter, and Clayton came out of the cabin. Logan and Poindexter had pistols in their hands. Clayton was holding a double-barrel shotgun.
What the hell was that shooting about? I told them I wanted to bring him here.
Logan, look. Someone is coming up the path.
There's only two of them. Wait, that's Greer. Look at there, boys. Greer's got the drop on him. Good man, Greer, good man.
As the two riders approached the house, Matt was riding in front with his hands in the air. Greer rode behind him, holding a pistol.
What happened? Where's Poole and Bragg?
Suddenly, Greer turned his horse and bolted.
Shoot him! It's a trick! I ain't got no bullets in this gun!
Clayton raised his shotgun, but before he could fire, Matt drew his pistol and shot.
Oh!
Before Matt could turn his pistol on Logan and Poindexter, they darted back into the cabin and slammed the door.
We've got the boy in here! And if you don't throw down your gun and put your hands up, well, we're gonna...
Logan! Where's the boy? He ain't here!
What do you mean he ain't here? We just left him! You were supposed to watch him!
A full-sized man couldn't have done it, and probably not even a small man. But Winnie had gone into the fireplace, then climbed up into the chimney. It had originally been his intent to escape through the chimney, but except for the very base of it, the chimney was much too narrow. Winnie had his feet on one side and his hands on the other, wedged in position and hanging on for dear life.
What the hell? Where is he?
How the hell am I supposed to know?
Logan, do you remember what you did to four of Fruin's cowboys? You remember when you set fire to the shack and burned them out?
I don't know what you're talking about!
Well, that's too bad. because I'm about to give you a taste of your own medicine. I'm going to set fire to the cabin. You can either come out or you can stay in there and burn to death. And frankly, I hope you stay in there.
If Matt Jensen actually did set fire to the cabin, Winnie knew that he would be trapped in here. Should he call out? No, he decided. Right now, Matt Jensen had the advantage over Logan and Poindexter. But if Logan and Poindexter had him, his advantage would be lost. If he surrendered now, he would not be killed in a fire, but Matt Jensen would certainly be killed. And after they killed Matt, Winnie was fairly certain he would be killed as well. On the other hand, Jensen might yet be able to save both of them. Winnie decided to stay where he was. Outside the cabin, Matt began gathering up some dead limbs and dry pine needles. When he got them together, he piled them up on the front porch and struck a match to them.
You better make up your minds pretty quick. This whole thing will burn down in just a couple of minutes. Come out slow with no guns and your hands up.
Suddenly, the front door opened and Logan and Poindexter came out, not slow and unarmed as Matt had demanded, but running, shouting, and firing their pistols. Matt took both of them down with two quick shots.
Winnie! Winnie, are you here hiding somewhere? It's all right, they're dead.
Looking toward the front door, Matt saw Winnie running through it, waving his arms to keep the smoke away.
Winnie, are you all right?
I'm all right.
Winnie was covered with black soot from head to toe.
What the hell? Are you sure? How'd you get so black?
I hid in the chimney of the fireplace.
Like Santa Claus.
Mama has told me that in America, Father Christmas comes down the chimney. But I have seen drawings of Santa Claus, and from what I saw in the chimney, I don't think that is true.
Matt wrapped his arms around Winnie and pulled him to him. That was when he saw Greer raising a rifle aiming at them.
Get out!
Matt shoved Winnie forcefully to the ground. Matt dropped to one knee just as Greer fired. Matt returned fire, and Greer fell back. A couple hours later, after stopping at the river to allow Winnie to clean up and also to retrieve his journal, the two of them rode through the front gate to Fruin Castle.
Winnie, oh, thank God you're safe. And thank Mr. Jensen.
Jenny was in the kitchen with Clara and the cook, supervising a very special welcome home dinner for Winnie, his favorite roast beef with Yorkshire pudding. Winnie was sitting on the front porch with Fruin and Matt. Matt had been invited for the dinner.
I don't know what happened to Tudor Monarch. I didn't see him when we left.
Well, I wouldn't worry about him. Horses are pretty smart. He hasn't turned up here, but I expect he's gone back to Thistledown. I'm surprised, though, that William hasn't said anything about it.
Uncle, that reminds me. I overheard a strange thing while I was being held captive.
What is that?
One of the outlaws, Mr. Poindexter, made a strange comment. He said, "You've heard Teasdale talking, haven't you? Always so prim and proper." And he said it in a way that led me to believe that it wasn't just something he had overheard, but something that occurred in an actual conversation with Sir William. And then, after he said that, Mr. Logan struck him in the face. When Mr. Poindexter asked him why he hit him, Mr. Logan said, "Because you've got a big mouth, Poindexter." Later, Mr. Logan asked me if I had overheard them, and though I had, I pretended as if I had not, because it seemed important to him that I not have heard. I found that very strange.
Winnie, what are you suggesting? Are you suggesting that Sir William was in league with Sam Logan? That is impossible. He is my closest friend. He is a fellow Englishman.
And so was Guy Fawkes.
You know of Guy Fawkes? I am impressed. But it isn't the same thing.
I think it is. I wasn't going to say anything yet, but since Winnie brought it up, I'll mention it now. When Greer, Bragg, and Poole arrived to meet me, they were talking about the $5,000 reward that was put out on me.
Yes, well, it has been no secret that there was a reward posted for you. Everyone knows about that.
Yes, and everyone, including me, assumed that the reward had been posted by Sam Logan. But that isn't true. It was posted by William Teasdale.
Oh, my God. I should have seen this. William and his repeated offers to buy me out, at much less than the ranch is worth, is all part of the pattern, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And I'm glad you understand. I was afraid I might not be able to convince you.
No, I'm convinced. And what Winnie said makes sense now as well. Logan would not have wanted him to overhear something that would implicate William.
What are you going to do now, Uncle Morton?
I must confront him. He must not be allowed to think that he can get away with it.
There's no need for you to do that.
I don't agree. He must be confronted.
Oh, I'm not saying that he doesn't need to be confronted. I'm just saying you don't need to do it. I'm going to.
That isn't necessary, Matt. You stop the Yellow Kerchief Gang. You stop the rustling. You have fully lived up to your bargain and earned every cent I paid you.
This one is for me. William Teasdale put a $5,000 reward out for me. I take something like that very personal. So I will be calling on him, personally.
At the side of the house, but back behind the porch where it couldn't be seen, Myron Morrison stood in the shadows, listening to the conversation. When he had heard all he needed to hear, he went to the stable, saddled his horse, and started to ride away. Once he reached Thistledown, Morrison rode through the gate unchallenged. Then, dismounting, he walked up to the front door and pulled the bell cord. Teasdale himself answered the door.
You took quite a risk coming here like this, didn't you? I thought we were going to keep our meeting secret.
Well, I suppose I did, but it's a risk that needs to be taken. We need to talk. I suppose you know that Sam Logan is dead?
No, I didn't know that.
And he isn't the only one who's dead. Jensen wiped out Logan's entire gang, every one of them.
I'll be damned. Who is this man? Is there no way to stop him?
You had better hope there is.
Why? What do you mean?
He knows about you.
He knows what about me?
He knows everything about you. He knows that you were the one back in Logan. He knows that you were the one that put the reward out on him.
Bloody hell. How does he know that?
He overheard some of Logan's men talking. Now he's coming for you.
What? What do you mean? Coming where? When?
Today.
I've got to get out of here.
No, you don't. That wouldn't do you a bit of good. He'd just come after you.
My God. My God, what can I do? What can I do?
How many cowboys do you have working for you?
22.
How many of them do you trust? I mean, absolutely trust.
I don't know. I'd have to find out from Reed.
I'd say no more than 10.
Do you know which 10?
Yeah, of course.
Send the others away. The rest of us will establish a defensive position, and when Jensen shows up, we'll take care of him once and for all.
What about Fruin?
Without Jensen, Fruin is weak. My guess is, once Jensen is dead, and he knows he is dead, he'll be anxious to sell out.
Good.
Just don't forget the arrangement we have. One quarter of his ranch comes to me.
I made the deal, and I'm sticking with it. One quarter to you, and one quarter to Reed.
You got any ideas about how to set up this defensive position you were talking about?
I was a major during the war. I have set many defensive positions.
Yeah, well, I was in the war, too. There's a difference.
What's the difference?
My side won.
Before Matt left the bunkhouse, he loaded his rifle and his pistol, plus 3 extra cylinders. With 75 rounds in his rifle and a total of 24 accessible rounds for his pistol, he was ready to take on whatever Teasdale might have ready for him. As he tightened the cinch on Spirit, Fruin came out of the house to talk to him.
Are you sure you want to do this alone? I could ask Mr. Morrison to get some men together to go with you.
They just get in the way. And I don't want to get any more of your men killed. You've lost enough.
That's the truth. Besides which, I don't know where Mr. Morrison is. Some of the boys tell me he rode into town, which I think is quite strange. It's not like him to just disappear, especially at a time as critical as this.
Matt? Matt, where are you going?
I need to take care of some business.
Dangerous business.
Matt swung into the saddle, then looked down at Fruin. Fruin reached up his hand and Matt took it.
I would say God go with you, but I expect this is going to be more of the devil's work than God's.
I expect so.
Oh, I'm afraid. afraid he might be killed.
There will be some killing done. Of that, I've no doubt. But I have a feeling that Mr. Jensen will come through this just fine.
I want a lookout posted in the loft of the barn at all times. And I want another one on top of the barn and on top of the machine shed. Also, get somebody on top of the silo.
Morrison stood on the plaza at Thistledown, giving orders to Reed.
Who the hell are you to be giving the orders here? I'm foreman of this ranch.
And I own it. You will do what Mr. Morrison says.
All right, all right. Just so long as you don't back out on our deal after this is all over.
I assure you, once this is all over, all obligations and commitments I have made will be satisfied. Now, in the meantime, we need to defend against this man Jensen. So please do whatever Mr. Morrison tells you to do.
What about the rifle pits? How are they coming?
Why are you doing all this anyhow? We ain't getting ready to fight off no army.
Oh, but we are, friend. Believe me, we are. Matt Jensen is a one-man army.
You act like you're afraid of him.
I am afraid of him. And you would be too if you had any sense. Look at the people you've sent against him. Kyle Houston, he's supposed to be faster than lightning. Carlos Silva, he could kill a man from a mile distant, they say. Jake Scarns, how far'd he get? They had their try at him, but he killed all three of them. And that was before he killed Sam Logan and every member of the Yellow Kerchief Gang. You're damn right I'm afraid of him. Now get busy and do what I told you to do.
All right, all right. I'll get the lookouts all posted like you said, and I'll get men in the rifle pits. Now, how about a cannon or two, or maybe a Gatling gun? Would you like them as well?
Damn right if I thought we had some.
You keep talking about Jensen like this, and you are going to scare everyone to death.
I want everyone to be scared of him.
How good is he, anyway?
You have to ask. Six men have tried to kill him, and all six have died.
Those could have all been flukes. I mean, you have the ranch laid out like a battlefield in the Franco-Prussian War. Only it isn't the Prussians, it's Matt Jensen. He is only one man.
What's your point?
My point is, when you have a good battle plan, and I think you have laid this out brilliantly, when you have the advantage of surprise, and we certainly have that, and when you have superior numbers and firepower, then it is simply a matter of execution.
Execution, yeah. But whose?
It was mid-afternoon, and the sun was midway down in the western sky. The men were suffering from the heat, and they slapped at flies and gnats and squinted into the unrelenting glare of bright sunlight as they waited. The longer they waited, the more nervous and irritable they became. Matt knew that a long afternoon of waiting would just increase the tension. That was one of the reasons he hadn't actually made his presence known. Right now, he was on a hill about 200 yards away from the big house, and he had been there since just after morning. He knew when it was lunchtime because from where he was positioned, he could smell meat and potatoes cooking. His stomach growled in protest. All he had to satisfy his own hunger was a piece of jerky and a couple of swallows of water. After his meager meal, Matt lay flat on his stomach, then looked through his binoculars at the activity below. He had known that he would find Teasdale and Reed and a few of his cowboys here, but he was a little surprised by how many there were. That isn't what surprised him the most, though. What surprised him the most was seeing Myron Morrison, Fruin's trusted foreman, standing side by side with Teasdale and Reed, pointing to various places on the ranch.
Why, you traitorous son of a bitch.
Then, Matt smiled. Morrison was pointing out every defensive position to Teasdale, and in so doing, was pointing them out to Matt as well. Though he was surprised at the number of defenders, he wasn't surprised by the preparations they had made for him. If Morrison had laid them out, they had to be good. Matt knew of Morrison's military background. Matt was able to make a careful survey of every defensive position that had been established. There were four rifle pits just inside the main gate, each pit containing two men, with each man in the pits having an overlapping field of fire. The overlapping field of fire meant that there was no way to approach from the front without coming under fire from more than one of the defenders. In addition to the rifle pits, Matt picked five more strategic positions. There was a man on the roof of the machine shed, one on top of the barn, and another one in the hayloft. There was also a man on top of the silo. Morrison and Reed didn't appear to have any specific defensive positions, but were free to move about as needed. Teasdale went back into the house and would probably stay there when the shooting started. He didn't know whether Mrs. Teasdale was in the house or not, but he assumed that she was, and he didn't want to hurt her. Morrison's military acumen was apparent in the way he had deployed the defenses. He could stop an army in its tracks. Matt smiled. He wasn't an army. He was one man. And he was pretty sure that one man sneaking through the cracks could get through. At least, he was gambling on that. As the sun dipped lower in the west, Matt decided to try and improve his position. There was another protected spot off to his left, a little ridge line that protruded like a finger pointing right at the big house. The end of the finger was 100 yards closer to the house than he was now, and from there, Matt would be able to see more clearly what was going on. But if he was going to do it, he would have to do it now, before it got too dark to see. Reaching that vantage point, however, meant he would have to cross an exposed area that was about 50 yards wide. Matt moved back down off the rock and walked over to his horse. Since he had gotten into position, his horse had enjoyed a fairly relaxed afternoon, cropping grass, drinking water, and depositing horse apples. Matt figured Spirit should be well rested now, and that was good, because he was going to call upon him to run the gauntlet.
You ready, Spirit? I hope so, because when we go, you're going to have to give me all you've got.
Gripping his pistol, Matt put his foot in the stirrup and lifted himself up. But he didn't get in the saddle. Instead, he remained bent over, hidden behind his horse. Once he had his balance and a good hold, he urged the animal across the open area. Spirit broke out into the clearing at a full gallop.
Here he comes!
What do you mean? That's just a horse. There ain't nobody riding it.
The hell there ain't. There the son of a bitch is, hanging on the other side.
Knowing now that he had been spotted, Matt raised up and fired just across the saddle. The men in the rifle pits, the one on the roof of the machine shed, and the one on top of the silo began shooting, but Spirit was at full gallop, and Matt was mostly out of sight. Also, his appearance had been sudden and unexpected, so no one was shooting accurately. Even after Matt had made it all the way across and was completely out of their line of fire, they kept up their shooting.
Stop! Stop! What the hell are you shooting at? Cease fire! Quit shooting! You're just wasting ammunition!
Matt was in a good, secure position now. No one could take a shot at him without exposing themselves, and he was close enough to observe everything. He knew he wasn't going to be able to improve his position until after it got dark, but with the sun already a blood-red disk low on the western horizon, darkness wasn't too far away. Before it was too dark to see, Matt made a careful examination of the big house. Once he saw Teasdale peering anxiously through the downstairs window. It was about an hour after dark when Matt got an unexpected break. A few of Teasdale's men, who had spent the day searching the range for him, were now coming back. Not realizing they were riding into any danger, they continued on into the compound without identifying themselves. The men who were nearest the front gate were already so nervous that they were jumping at every shadow. They had completely forgotten about those who were out on the range and were totally surprised to see a large body of men riding up on them. A rifle shot rang out from one of the pits, and it was returned by the approaching horsemen who thought they were being fired at by Matt Jensen. Matt realized at once what was happening, and he decided to take advantage of the opportunity that had just presented itself. As the guns banged and crashed around him, he sneaked out of his hiding position. He mounted, then rode north for a couple of 100 yards out of the line of fire. He had no intention of getting shot accidentally when none of them had been able to shoot him by design. From his new position, Matt looked back toward the battle and could see the flashes of light from each gunshot. The first thing he had to do was get down to the house unobserved and without risking a stray bullet. And that was easier said than done. As the shooting continued, Matt began to make a wide circle, staying at least a quarter of a mile from the big house until finally he was around behind it. Just as he got into position, the men recognized that they had been shooting at each other, and the firing finally stopped. Matt moved through the shadows past the smokehouse, where the aroma of the cured meat reminded him that he had eaten nothing but a few pieces of jerky all day. He saw an outside door that led to the cellar. He was sure it would be locked, but when he tried it, he discovered to his surprise satisfaction that he could lift it open. Matt closed the door behind him, then went down the steep stairway, feeling his way step by step. He had never been in such dark before. He literally could not see his hand where he held it 3 inches in front of his face. When he reached the bottom, he held his arm out in front of him and began moving back and forth, using it to feel his way across the dirt floor until he encountered a support post. He took out a match and struck it against the post. In the flare of the match, he saw a stack of candles on a shelf, and he got to them, managing to light one just before his match went out. Now, in the golden bubble of light, he could see. And he made a closer examination of the cellar. He saw several jars of canned food, tools, rope, a furnace, and a coal bin. And he saw a set of steps going up. He used the candle to get him over to the steps. Then he blew it out. Matt moved up the stairs one at a time, treading softly on each one until he reached the top. This door, too, was unlocked, and Matt opened it. He found himself on a small landing with four more steps going up in the opposite direction. When he got to the top, there was a bit of ambient light coming from a room to the left, and improving his position to where he could look inside, he saw Teasdale, Morrison, and Reed together in the parlor. Morrison and Reed were both standing at the window looking outside. Teasdale sat in a big leather armchair.
I can't believe the dumb bastards shot each other up like that.
Why not? Stonewall Jackson was killed by his own men. Things like that happen.
Well, what do we do now?
If they don't get so nervous that they start shooting each other again, we'll just wait out the night. Right now, in the dark, he has the advantage. But when it gets light, he'll be exposed, and it'll be our turn again.
Where do you think he is now?
It doesn't matter. We know that he isn't here, and we know that his objective is Teasdale. Right now, we have the upper hand.
Morrison turned, then walked over toward a sofa.
Where are you going? What are you doing?
I'm going to take a nap. It's 2 o'clock. Wake me up at 4. Then you can get a couple hours.
Looking around, Matt saw that he was in a small anteroom that was just off the parlor. He decided that this must be Teasdale's office. There was a closet at the back of the room, and when Matt opened it and checked inside, he was able to determine that it was wide enough that he could move into one end and be completely out of sight. He decided that if Morrison could take a nap, he could too. He would sleep until morning. Matt always did have an internal clock. He could tell himself what time he wanted to awaken and do so within 2 or 3 minutes of that time. He opened his eyes just before the clock chimed 6. He could see a thin line of light coming under the closed door. Moving to the door, he stood there for a moment listening, then slowly and quietly opened it and stepped out into Teasdale's office. It was full daylight outside. Matt retraced the steps to the parlor. Reed was asleep on the sofa. Teasdale slept in the big leather chair, and Morrison stood looking through the window.
Morrison, you should be ashamed of yourself.
Dude, what the hell?
Morrison's pistol was in his holder. He saw that Matt's gun was in his hand.
Where did you come from?
What is it? What is going on? How did you get through everyone?
It was easy. While they were shooting each other, I just came on into your house. I spent the night in your office. This is a very nice office. You had a very good thing going here, Teasdale. It's a shame you couldn't have been satisfied with what you had. You had to try and break Mr. Fruin by sending Logan and his outlaws out to steal his cattle.
I didn't do that.
Don't lie to me, Teasdale. I don't like it when people lie to me. I know damn well you've been working with Logan, and I have his journal to prove it.
What are you talking about? What journal?
Ah, I see. You didn't know about his journal, did you? He wrote it all down, everything. Dates, how many cattle he stole, how much money you gave him for each head. What was it? $5 a head, I think his journal says.
Matt was running a bluff. There was no journal. He was merely using the information he had overheard in the conversation between Poole, Greer, and Bragg.
What fool would keep a journal like that?
What I don't understand is how you could do something like that to a fellow countryman, someone who's supposed to be your friend.
Fruin is an incompetent idiot. He has lost thousands and thousands of dollars for his investors. Once they find out what I have done, they will thank me.
And will they thank you for murdering so many of Mr. Fruin's men? How many was it, 6?
I had nothing to do with anyone getting killed.
What about Kyle Houston, Carlos Silva, Jake Scarnes? What about Carter, Hodge, and Decker? Do you have anything to do with them being killed?
What are you talking about? You killed those men.
Because you offered them money to kill me. You're the one who set it in motion, Teasdale.
You can't hold me responsible for that.
I can and I do. By my count, Teasdale, no fewer than 22 men have died because of your greed and ambition. And that isn't counting how many were killed last night when your own men started shooting at each other. You're a mass murderer, Teasdale. You've killed more men than Billy the Kid.
You are crazy. No court will believe that.
No court will believe it. No court. You don't understand, do you? I am the court. I am the prosecutor, I am the jury, I am the judge, and I am the executioner. I find you guilty as charged, and I sentence you to death.
No! God, no! I beg of you, don't kill me! Don't kill me! I didn't know so many people were going to be killed. I thought Fruin would give up and go home.
William!
Margaret Teasdale had just appeared in the door that opened onto the hall from the parlor.
You did that? You are the cause of all those men being killed? You are the cause of Morton Fruin's troubles?
You don't understand, Margaret. I did it for you. I did it all for you.
For me? You did it for me? How dare you say that? Clara is the best friend I have in this world. How can I ever face her again?
Stand up, Teasdale.
No. Please, no.
Stand up, William. Stand up and face him like a man, for God's sake.
Teasdale got up, and when he did, it was obvious to all in the room that he had wet his pants. He began shaking uncontrollably. Matt eased the hammer down, then lowered his pistol.
The killing ends now. How many men do you have outside?
I had 17, counting the men who were out on the range looking for you. But 4 were killed last night, and 5 were wounded. There are 8 left.
Reed, go outside and call them in. I want them disarmed and standing out front, all 8 of them.
Reed left to carry out Matt's instructions. Teasdale walked over to the wall, then leaned against it.
What happens to me?
You're the biggest disappointment of all, Morrison. Fruin trusted you completely. The boy looked up to you. All of your men respected you. Benedict Arnold has nothing on you.
Morrison looked down in shame.
Don't ever show your face at the ranch again. Leave, now.
I've got some things back at the ranch. I'll have to go back.
No. No going back. Leave. Now. Come, Teasdale.
Matt motioned toward the front porch with his pistol. When they stepped out onto the porch, Reed and the 8 remaining men had gathered out front. Reed saw Morrison mounting his horse.
Hey, Morrison, where you going?
Man, there's no job for you here. There's no money for you here. My advice to you is to leave.
The 8 men looked at each other for a moment. Then they broke into a run toward the stable. Less than 3 minutes later, all of them were mounted and leaving at a gallop.
Those men are riding my horses.
You don't have any horses. Reed, get the dead and the wounded onto a wagon and get them in town. What I told the men goes for you as well. I don't ever want to see you around here again.
With the business taken care of, Matt motioned for Teasdale to go back inside. Margaret sat on a chair in the corner of the room, weeping silently. Teasdale started toward her, but she turned away from him.
No, stay away from me! You disgust me!
Matt picked up the phone and called Marshal Drew.
Marshal, Matt Jensen. Come out to Thistledown. We've got a prisoner for you. That's right, Thistledown. Your prisoner is William Teasdale.
Number 10 Downing Street, London, June 23, 1944.
Mr. Prime Minister.
An RAF colonel stuck his head into the cabinet room where Winston Churchill and General Eisenhower were still in conversation.
We have the strike report on the American attack at Peenemünde.
Yes, 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 let us hear it. This is where the BARC are launching their bloody buzz bombs.
377 B-17s bombed the launch site at Peenemünde, the experimental headquarters at Zinowitz, and the marshalling yards at Strassland. Three B-17s were lost and 64 badly damaged. There are 297 escort fighters, consisting of P-38 Lightnings and P-51 Mustangs. Three of the Mustangs were shot down. The launch pad near Verkhas Sud was a complete loss.
Thank you, General, and my prayer for the American boys who carried out the raid.
Churchill refreshed his drink, then he held up the bottle of Tennessee Mash for Eisenhower.
Recharge your glass, General.
No, I'm fine, thank you. I would like to hear the rest of your story, though. What happened to Teasdale and Frewen?
Teasdale was tried and found guilty of receiving stolen property. He should have been tried for murder, but they didn't think they could make the case. He didn't serve one day in prison. Instead, he was deported back to England, where he was disgraced and ostracized by his peers. 3 years after he returned, his wife found him one morning slumped over his desk with a bullet in his brain. He committed suicide. Margaret, I am glad to say, remarried and lived comfortably until she died about 6 years ago. Frewen drove all his cattle 1,000 miles north to Alberta, where he sold out. Then, for the next 30 years, he traveled the world, investing in inventions, disinfectants, forests, poets, artists, and gold, silver, and coal mines. He never succeeded at any venture he tried, though he never quite went bankrupt. Late in life, he actually became a Member of Parliament, and I am happy to say that I was the first one to welcome him. I love that old man, despite his faults and foibles.
And Morrison?
Believe it or not, Morrison and I corresponded for a while, and he and Uncle Morton even reconciled. He was a sheriff's deputy down in Texas the last time I heard from him.
Reed?
Less than 6 months later, Reed was killed in an aborted bank robbery.
You don't have to tell me what happened to the boy. I know where he wound up.
I never heard again from some of the cowboys I met. Jeff Singleton, for example, or Tibby Ware, or any of the others. I'm sure they never thought I would amount to anything, and indeed, whether I have or not will be for history to decide. But I do wonder sometimes if they have ever made the connection between the Prime Minister of Great Britain and the boy who used to eat grub with them.
You don't have to say anything more about Matt Jensen either. I've read enough books about that gentleman to know what a stalwart and heroic career he had.
General, I have something I would like to give you.
Oh?
I've kept it for low these many years, but because it is truly American in origin by rights, it should belong to an American. And not just any American, but to one who is worthy. Wait here a moment.
Churchill left the cabinet room for fully a minute while Eisenhower lit a cigarette, wondering what this was all about. When Churchill returned, he held a small silver box.
This is for you.
Eisenhower looked at the box in curiosity.
Not the box. What is inside?
Eisenhower opened the box and saw inside a single bullet. He removed the bullet, then held it out to look at it. His curiosity still not satisfied.
It is a bullet.
Yes, but not just any bullet. This, my dear General, is a 44 caliber bullet that Matt Jensen personally removed from the cylinder of his pistol. He gave it to me as a keepsake. But now, on behalf of a grateful nation for what you have done for us, I take tremendous pleasure giving it to you.
Mr. Prime Minister, I don't know what to say. I appreciate this very much.
I thought you might. Us cowboys are simpatico that way. Oh, there is one way I would let you get rid of it, though.
How's that?
If you could find a Colt 44 pistol and use it personally to put a bullet in Hitler's head.
Matt Jensen, The Last Mountain Man, Massacre at Powder River is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2012, William W. Johnstone. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2013, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Dylan Lynch, Thomas Penny, Stephen Carpenter, Gary Tells, David Coyne, Johann Detweiler, Michael Glenn, Christopher Graybill, Nanette Savard, Terence Aselford, Patrick Bussink, Thomas Keegan, Lily David, Michael John Casey, Joel David Santner, Nick DePinto, David Harris, Tracy Oliveira, Elizabeth Jernigan, Eric Messner, and Alyssa Wilmoth. Additional Boot Hill Boys by The Dead Giveaways. Adapted for graphic audio and directed by Johann Detweiler. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Thomas Hogan. The Matt Jensen theme is by Johann Detweiler, with additional original music by Thomas Hogan. If you enjoyed Massacre at Powder River, read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. And be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's The First Mountain Man and Blood Bond series, and Elmer Kelton's The Wolf and the Buffalo, all available in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloads, audio guides, and podcasts. Keep listening for exciting previews of other titles in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.